Welcome to the fourth and final episode of season two of the Holistic Matters podcast series, Building a Healthy Lifestyle. I am Megan Hamrock, and today we will be talking about sleep, stress management, and exercise as foundational components of holistic health. You can find all of season two's episodes on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. In the past couple of weeks, we've talked about what it means to be healthy, why holistic health matters, and the whole food advantage. Be sure to check out episodes 1-3 if you haven't already. For additional resources and references, go online to holisticmatters.com. We are joined today by nutrition scientist Christine Polly, who has a PhD in foods and nutrition from the University of Georgia and specializes in exercise physiology. She was also a collegiate athlete at Florida State University, and we're lucky to gain insights from both her athletic and academic experiences. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Nutrition and diet are foundational components of the holistic approach to health. But sleep, stress, and physical activity are also important. And remember, that's holistic with a W. We talked with nutrition scientist Weston Bussler in episode 2 a few weeks ago about holistic health and how it encompasses approaches to health focusing on supporting the whole body. And sleep, stress management, and physical activity do just that. So let's begin today's discussion with sleep. Sleep is often overlooked as essential to our health. We do live in this really fast-paced society where all we want to do is go, go, go. And the attitude towards sleep often is, it's a luxury, right? You can sleep when you're dead. I feel like I hear that quite a bit. But often that's just kind of adding to the whole spectrum of poor health. And when we talk about what it is to be healthy, we need to be well rested. When we're well rested, we are having improved decision making. We have a better attention span. We are boosting our creativity. We have a more robust memory and also increased productivity. So not only do these things help in our day-to-day actions, but sleep also aids in the repair of our whole body support. So repairing our heart and blood vessels and maintaining a hormonal balance, especially those hunger hormones. And it helps to regulate blood sugar levels and bolsters our immune support. All over, sleep is the where we can actually go ahead and really recharge ourselves.
Yeah, and Megan, I like how you pointed out that a lot of people are focusing on you sleep when you're dead. And I think, you know, as we will talk more about exercise and everything, a lot of athletes, and they put training and ahead of sleep and saying that, you know, we have to just work our bodies constantly to get where we need to be, when in actuality, sleep is so important. And I think that's starting to be highlighted more and more today. Having a sleep schedule is going to be really important, and planning it out like you would any other activity that you do during the day. So highlighting those areas of sleep, just when you sleep, how much it heals the body as well. So focusing on that with sleep.
So just how much should we actually be sleeping? A 2018 article published in the journal appropriately titled Sleep reported that almost one-third of Americans actually sleep less than 6 hours per night. However, the National Sleep Foundation says we approximately would need about 7 to 9 hours for most adults ages 18 to 64. They do suggest that naps can count towards that total number, but ultimately they do not recommend that naps go longer than 60 to 90 minutes due to kind of that groggy effect that does come after waking up from a nap in the middle of the day. However, is it realistic for you to even get naps in the day based on your current work schedule or exercise schedule or day to day? That's totally variable per person. But when we think about those cumulative 7 to 9 hours, the quality of sleep is also really important. And many things will affect that quality. Not only do sleep disorders, and that can include anything from sleep apnea, teeth grinding, restless leg syndrome, but medications also may have an effect on your quality of sleep. There might be different side effects that are attached to each medication. Of course, when you're traveling, oftentimes you are put into a new environment, and that sleep habit that you might have been used to in your own home is turned around. So you've got that added stress of adapting to your new surroundings and your new environment that are definitely taking a toll on how quickly or how soundly you will sleep at night. And by no means is one way the perfect way to actually sleep each and every night, but Typically, a lot of the tips for healthy sleep do include consistent routine. So anytime you are thrown off kilter, it does take some time for your body to readjust to your normal consistent bedtime or your normal consistent routine. Other tips that might help though with healthier sleep do include being active, and we'll talk a lot more about that here shortly, but also we want to tie that in with nutrition, and we want to think about our screen time usage as well. Oftentimes we are attached to our cell phone or TV before bed, and all of these different lights definitely have an effect on how we're going to have quality sleep that night.
Yeah, so another thing that can affect quality of sleep is circadian rhythm. And your circadian rhythm is the body's internal clock that governs things like a sleep-wake schedule. So staying on this sleep-wake schedule is going to be important and can affect diet, can affect nutrition, how you're eating and consuming food, and what types of food you're consuming. It is all linked back to really staying on this circadian rhythm. It also provides logic for, you know, sleeping at night when it's dark outside and then being awake during the day when it's light and having activity and eating and all of this. If we get off of this circadian rhythm or this sleep-wake schedule, this can affect mental performance and just how you feel during the day. All of this, if you do get off this schedule and the circadian rhythm, can lead to detrimental effects in the long run on nutrition and on just your daily performance.
Exactly, Christine. And I think what we don't really associate is nutrition with our quality of sleep oftentimes. And other factors of nutrition that would affect it include caffeine consumption, alcohol consumption, and both of those should be limited before bedtime to improve the quality of sleep. And even not to mention large meals. You know, we do live in the world where our dinner typically is the largest meal of the day, but in reality, we should be swapping that with when our activity levels are going to be cycling. And when we eat a large meal, and then become sedentary for the rest of the night and then lay down in bed, we're going to have reflux, we're going to have, you know, digestion issues. So it's oftentimes recommended to avoid those larger meals before bed as well.
Exactly.
And ultimately too, I think all of us might struggle every once in a while with getting into bed and not being able to actually fall asleep, right? So the number one thing I think most of us then do is reach for our phone, reach for the remote control, when the National Sleep Foundation does recommend that if you can't sleep, it's best to get up and go to another place and, you know, read or do something that does not include some light form until you do feel tired, and then you're able to retract back into your bed and have a better quality of sleep then with that. So all of these factors are important to consider. And of course, you know, we look at them as a whole, but these are all individual steps or actions that we could go ahead and take each and every day to improve our quality of sleep, to rejuvenate ourselves.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm even guilty of taking my phone if I can't sleep and looking up stuff on the internet. But even the apps that they have out there today, and some of these apps are like for meditation and for to try and help you sleep. And, you know, if you do turn on one of those apps, just make sure like it's a good distance from your visual sight and you're just really listening to the words and you don't have that visual effect going on.
And precisely all of those apps that we have available to us now with meditation and calming music, they're meant to be stress reducers as well. And I think that's extremely important as we kind of segue into stress management, because we have found that like 3 out of 4 Americans report experiencing one stress symptom within the last month. And this was from a study of the Stress in American survey in 2017. And stress symptoms can be many, many things. And that could include lying awake at night, feeling nervous or anxious, being irritable, angry, or fatigued. So stress is a real thing. Stress is something that we really do need to account for in our everyday. And the Cleveland Clinic defines stress specifically as the body's reaction to any change that requires an adjustment or response. So there is good stress and there is bad stress. So a lot of times we hear that fight or flight mechanism. So when we think about stress being positive, it's helping us stay alert and it's helping us respond to the situation, but it then can turn negative after this is a continuous feat on ourselves that's becoming fatigued and there's zero relief in the process. So oftentimes we see those symptoms with effects of stress, including headaches or muscle fatigue, muscle tension, anxiety, restlessness, overwhelm sensation, socially withdrawing from situations. Nutrition can be affected as well when we're stressed. We either overeat or undereat. So there are plenty of areas where stress has a primary effect. And just even that segue in from sleep is an important thing to notice, because ultimately unmanaged stress can lead to chronic states of health. And we see that stress is being more and more studied today as a potential avenue of where we can really make clear-cut changes to our lifestyles in order to live a better quality of life. And some of those tips that help reduce stress, you know, everybody's going to have their own idea of how they would like to reduce their own stress. But, you know, ideas do include anything from using humor, you know, as an outlet, laughing, and just different hobbies. Everybody has a different hobby that they like to do. And as long as it brings joy and a sense of excitement into your life, those are wonderful ways to reduce stress. We did talk a lot in a few episodes about mindfulness as a relaxation technique. And that, you know, not only is just being, you know, mindful of the situation that you're currently in, that's mindful with one word, but also, you know, meditation, those apps that Christine mentioned, there's plenty of resources and outlets today that we do have access to, which is wonderful, because these are all ultimately forms of self-care, right? We do need to be caring for ourselves. And I think one that is used ultimately a lot is exercise. So, and I know we're going to talk a lot more here about exercise, but it doesn't need to be, you know, going out and running a marathon. It can be just taking a walk or finding some type of outlet for sweating it out, if you would. And that's also seen as a really positive thing. And, you know, we can't always change our environment, but how we respond in all of these situations is really important when it comes to stress management. And I think exercise is one that I want to dive more into with our expert here, Christine.
I want to take some time today to just provide a brief overview of the relationship between physical activity, food, and the body. Nutritional support for physical activity is different for different types of athletes. So whether you're a professional athlete or just simply supporting a healthy and balanced lifestyle with regular physical activity, nutritional support is going to be important. Different types of physical activity, mainly endurance-based activity versus resistance-based activity, may require different nutritional support. And this is because different types of exercise induces different physiological effects in the body. So what is happening in the human body during physical activity? So different things are going to happen depending on which energy systems you're using. So first, if you're doing an all-out sprint, you're going to be tapping into your anaerobic capacity. So anaerobic meaning does not need to utilize oxygen. So this is going to tap into your ATP stores and phosphocreatine, which also makes ATP in the body. And then also it's going to tap into this anaerobic glycolysis. So this anaerobic glycolysis eventually forms lactic acid. And this can be used for about 43 to 100 seconds in physical activity all-out effort. So ATP, phosphocreatine, is usually a very short utilization. You're going to utilize that up in the first 10 to 20 seconds of exercise. And then your anaerobic glycolysis, that's going to be used up in the first 45 to 100 seconds of exercise. Anaerobic glycolysis, this is going to involve the non-aerobic breakdown of carbohydrates that you're consuming, so mainly in the form of muscle glycogen. So muscle glycogen is what is already stored in your body as a carbohydrate, so that is what is going to be tapped into with this anaerobic activity. For a more longer endurance type of exercise, the aerobic system is going to be used, and this does require oxygen. So this is also known as oxidative phosphorylation. So in contrast to the aerobic energy system, this oxidative phosphorylation is rate limited. This is because it does utilize oxygen. And so it's limited by the amount that your respiratory and cardiovascular systems are able to deliver oxygen to the muscle. During aerobic metabolism, this utilizes aerobic glycolysis, so again, the breakdown of carbohydrates, and also utilizes aerobic lipolysis, so this is going to be the breakdown of fats. So why is nutritional support important for physical activity. Well, it's going to be very important to support these energy systems that are being utilized to a higher degree than sedentary individuals. So again, when you're utilizing these glycolysis, you know, lipolysis, breakdown of fats, you're using these macronutrients. So you need to make sure that you're eating to be able to supply your body with energy. But of course, in these different breakdowns and metabolism, you're going to be utilizing different micronutrients, so vitamins and minerals as well, that help support that metabolism of these carbohydrates and fats. And it's important to highlight too that whole food nutrient dense foods are going to provide nutrients that you need. So they're going to be a lot better, you know, than these processed foods that have a lot of nutrients at lower amounts than what you would find in a whole food. Processed foods, you know, they have these nutrients ultimately kind of processed out and at lower amounts. So again, it all comes back to making sure you're eating a whole food nutrient dense diet and supporting your body for the energy that you need, especially during high physical activity.
Exactly that. Those whole foods are so important to just making sure we're using all of what's in our body to the ultimate support that we can. And we talked a lot about the whole food advantage in episode 3 of this season. And I think we're just kind of coming full circle here with that whole conversation. So tell me a little bit more about what's actually happening to the body during endurance-based physical activity in comparison.
Yeah, so again, endurance-based physical activity is going to tap into that aerobic metabolism primarily. So aerobic metabolism is capable of producing extremely large amounts of ATP, where the anaerobic, where it does not use oxygen, that is going to be more a very short-term, very limited amount of ATP is going to be produced during that amount of time. But this aerobic exercise capacity is going to have a lot more ability to really sustain the athlete during those longer endurance type races. The first energy system that athletes will tap into is that aerobic glycolysis. So this is primarily going to be utilizing carbohydrates for energy to break down. And this is, you know, the literature says about 12 to 25 minutes is how long you'll tap into this aerobic glycolysis. And this will be your primary source of energy to fuel you during the race. However, there's only a limited or there's a finite capacity to be able to store glucose as muscle glycogen in the body. So we can store a lot more fat and a lot larger amounts in the body. So ultimately, after that glucose is used up in the body, we'll switch over to aerobic lipolysis. So during aerobic lipolysis, or the breakdown of fat, that's going to happen for around hours to 3 or 4 or 5 hours, depending on how long you're going for in that endurance race. That primarily is going to take over and be your primary source of energy. But it's also important to note, in these longer endurance races, depending on how long you're going for, refueling with carbohydrate during longer events can be beneficial. And that's been shown in a lot of research studies that refueling with carbohydrates during the event is going to be very important. However, you want to make sure that when you have an athlete trying this for the first time, that they train with this, that they start utilizing carbohydrates during practices, during their training, to get their bodies used to consuming something in the middle of that race or event. So you want to make sure that you don't just introduce this to an athlete during their performance or their competition, that they are also practicing with this as well. An interesting thing that's come out recently and has been a hot topic is that just simply mouth rinsing with a carbohydrate solution or even caffeine solution can have beneficial effects on performance. So that again is going to determine, you know, how long is that race going for? You know, if it's a really, really long race where it's 3, 4, 5 hours, just doing a mouth rinse might not have the same effect as maybe a little bit shorter of a race, like an hour to an hour and a half may have more of a beneficial effect seen from doing that mouth rinse and it triggering specific receptors in the body to slightly increase performance. So just something interesting that we can dive more into in the next season, talking about that with longer endurance type races and fueling for that. So again, one of the most important things, obviously, to make sure that your endurance athlete is fueling with our carbohydrates and fat, because those are the primary, you know, sources of energy that these athletes are going to be using consistently. They're going to be pulling energy from carbohydrates. They're going to be also utilizing fat as well. So next, I wanted to talk about resistance-based activity. So that's going back, and that's going to be primarily using the anaerobic energy system. So again, that energy system is going to be quick. It's going to use any stored up ATP that you have in your body, and it's also going to convert phosphocreatine into ATP so that you can use that as well. So that's going to happen in about the first 5 to 20 seconds of an all-out event. And then the other system that's going to be utilized is glycolysis, or anaerobic glycolysis. And this involves the breakdown of carbohydrates, mainly in the form of stored muscle glycogen. Again, that only has a finite capacity, so you will use that up. But that's going to break down and also form ATP for your body to utilize right away. So some nutritional support that might be important for resistance-based activity is going to be those, you know, what we utilize in the first 10 to 45 seconds of an all-out event. So creatine, that's one of the most talked about supplements, and taking that supplement helps to enhance storage of creatine in the body and may help that ATP phosphocreatine in the first 5 to 20 seconds of your event. And then also carbohydrate storage, making sure your muscle glycogen is stored up as much as possible so that you can utilize anaerobic glycolysis to its fullest capacity. And then what's very important for anaerobic-based physical activity, so resistance-based activity, is recovery. And I mean, recovery is important for any physical activity, primarily with nutritional support for resistance-based activity. Protein is going to be important for muscle protein synthesis and rebuilding the muscle after you break it down. So we'll talk more in depth about maybe different types of protein that's out there and what might be the most beneficial and pros and cons of different sources of them later on in the next season. Just tapping into some of those things right now. And then also thinking about just going a little bit further and diving deeper into this is nutritional support for both physical performance, which we talk about a lot, but also mental performance. Mental performance and just reaction times. Reaction times are going to be very important for the athlete, but also the stress and mood. Okay, so stress and mood, you know, we talked about how exercise can be really good for relieving stress. But when you have athletes that are constantly putting their bodies under both physical stress, it can be mental stress as well. We'll also dive more into supporting nutritionally athletes for training and then performance and then recovery. So these three different aspects we want to highlight. So not only what you think about right away, which is performance and recovery for athletes, but also how can we support them nutritionally day in and day out with just their training? It's important to recognize progress by listening to your body and acknowledging when you feel good or recover better as a result of certain lifestyle choices that you're making. So really sitting down with your athlete and talking about how you can start to listen to your body and really tap into that, because, you know, with this fast-paced world and everything, you know, moving so quickly, people forget to slow down for a minute and really try to listen to what their bodies are saying. So I think that's really important and can be even more important with somebody who's an extreme athlete and needs to know and listen, really listen to their body and get a sense of what they need. And this can also, you know, you can reach out to other people, whether it's like a lifestyle coach or anything, to really recognize and teach yourself how to listen to your body and get back to all of that. And nutritionally, how do we support it?
Christine, you really hit home on so many points that I think we've talked about throughout this entire season, especially when you're talking about working with experts in this field. As me, as the weekend warrior, per se, glycolysis is probably something that's coming to mind and how I'm going to refuel my body for different lengths of exercise that I might be doing. And I think that just really brings home that message of, you know, where we talked about in episode one of doing your research as like step number one as to what exactly do I need to be accounting for in my healthy lifestyle journey. And then really just doing that homework to figure out how am I going to be able to be the best person that I possibly can be within that exercise routine that I'm hoping to start. This is all just part of that whole goal setting process, and everyone's going to have a different point of entry. And I'm really grateful to have all of this expertise here.
Exactly like you said, you know, your weekend warrior, you're tapping into an increased metabolism as well. So just making sure you're eating correctly for that increased utilization of energy that you're having to get from food is going to be really important.
So I think just today's discussion in itself then wraps up season 2 quite well. We've concluded so many different things of building that healthy lifestyle. And I hope what you were able to take away over the past 4 weeks is that it is possible and beneficial to create a healthy lifestyle for yourself. Not just necessarily a New Year's resolution, but something that is a lifelong goal of yours, and you can just increase the quality of life through that. And you can create such lifestyle changes through realistic goal setting. Definitely continue to ponder on that longevity and that sustainability, because both of those aspects will be key to making that lifestyle change long term. And as we've pointed out just today, with all the different aspects of health, there's not just one form that's going to support your whole body. So that holistic approach, that's holistic with the W, what do we need to make sure we're doing? It's not just exercise. It's not just sleep. It's not just nutrition. All of these things eventually need to be part of your game plan. And of course, choosing the right foods, you know, choosing whole foods over processed foods is something that's a great habit to start with. But we just need to think of this whole spectrum, and ultimately then we'll have reduced stress and better sleep and better exercise and nutrition. And all of a sudden we have this healthy lifestyle that we were aiming for this entire time. So thank you all for listening, and don't forget to check out holisticmatters.com for more resources on nutrition, healthy lifestyles, and the holistic approach to health. The music featured on today's episode is from the artist Lee Ruzevere, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License.